I'm really passionate about creating systems that enable people instead of the opposite. And then I think we have a lot of examples of communities, systems, policies around the world that have done the opposite and kind of have held people back and kept them from their potential. And so I'm hoping that I can be part of that solution.
Hi, listeners. I'm your host, Brennan Coates, and this is Designing for Happiness. For today's episode, we interviewed Zachary Kunzman, where we talked about the concept of human-centered design and how this, related with the topic, together with the topic of happiness and well-being, can affect how people perceive the built environment. Zachary also works at the Ubuntu Architecture Summer Abroad program, so we talked a bit more about what this program is about and the importance of having such a program in today's world. So without further ado, let's get to it. Enjoy. Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. Oh, you're a professional. You even have the microphone and everything.
Yes. So yeah, I bought a microphone to make it more to increase the audio quality. Yeah.
That's good. Can you hear me okay? Or should I put in my headphones, or is this good?
No, it's fine as is. Yeah, it's perfect. Okay. Great. All right. So do you mind presenting yourself to the listeners and tell a bit more about you and what you do?
Oh yeah, okay. I'm really, really bad at this. I guess I have a question beforehand too. Are you using video too, or is it just the audio?
No, just the audio.
Just the audio. Okay, cool. Then mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about like how I look and my weird faces and everything. Well, awesome. Well, thank you for letting me talk to you today. My name is Zachary Kunzman. I grew up in the Door Peninsula in Wisconsin. I've always been passionate about people and caring for people. It's something that you know is founded in my family lineage through health professionals and people like nurses. That was not my cup of tea. And I felt that I could do more in the built environment and in, you know, advocating and helping to create that. So that's why I went into architecture. I went to school in Louisiana in the United States and studied architecture and sustainability and different building systems, as well as public policy and how that can impact things. And now I'm looking to go back to grad school for sustainable real estate development, mm-hmm. where hopefully I'll be able to learn more about that so that we can really make some impact and waves in the community. I'm really passionate about creating systems that enable people instead of the opposite. And then I think we have a lot of examples of communities, systems, policies around the world that have done the opposite and kind of have held people back and kept them from their potential. And so I'm hoping that I can be part of that solution.
That's great, great, wonderful. And for you, what does it mean to be happy?
What does it mean to be happy? Okay, so I think there's two different things to happy. I think there's happy to me means like right in the moment, like what's gonna bring me a smile or something like that, or mm-hmm. laughter. But then there's long-term happiness, which I think we can compute as relate to joy. And so joy is like the long-term over your lifespan, like are you continuously bringing happiness into your life and good things? And so, I hope that answered your question. If you need me to do it again, I can.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's perfect. I mean, so you're currently working at Ubuntu Summer Abroad program, right?
Correct. And yep.
Can you talk a bit more about what you guys do with the program and the importance of having such a program in today's world?
Sure. Yes. So Ubuntu Architecture Summer Abroad program is something that's new. It was came out of Wandile Mithiane from Durban, South Africa. He went to school in the United States, and he realized that in the architecture curriculum, a lot of times we're designing buildings for like the 1% or mm-hmm. groups of people that can afford it. And what about all the other people in the world? What about all the people, you know, in other countries? Most of the people that we design for in our architecture curriculums seem to be in bigger, more affluent cities, and there are people in other parts of the world. And so Ubuntu ASAP is to kind of break that mold and break that stigma and show that we can design for everybody. And Ubuntu ASAP is something that will help alleviate some of the cycles of poverty and generational poverty in Durban and hopefully in other areas as we expand. But in apartheid South Africa, it's no longer a public policy, but the systemic impact from those policies is still being felt and still keeping people from being able to succeed and accumulate wealth within their family. And so what we're trying to do is create a model where we can help students understand and grow and realize that architecture can be more than just a beautiful, pretty building that only 1% of the population will ever get to see or walk in, and that we can actually create change, but also help families and empower families in South Africa by giving them a home and also giving them a commercial space that they can then empower their community through like a daycare center or something like that. And so it's just a lot of empowerment.
Great, great, great. And it's something that you guys do for how long now? How long ago did you start with the program?
Yeah, so the program Ubuntu ASAP has officially been launched last year. And so we're going through our first cohort of students as the program is named Ubuntu ASAP. But there was a previous home that was done with Wandili and his institution that he attended for his master's program. And that was Andrews University and a handful of other groups and entities that were involved in that. And so technically we have one home that's been completed and one family that's been helped and empowered. But the official program itself was started last year.
Oh, okay. Great, great. And in your opinion, what's the relationship between design and happiness and well-being?
Ooh, the relationship between design, happiness, and well-being. I think I've always been fascinated with Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I don't know if you're aware of that. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have. Yes.
And so I think that we need to have certain elements in our built environment that enable us to kind of move up on those different steps of that ladder. And I think in some ways, money and politics and greed can sometimes push away the priority for some people to elevate that when they are building something, or if they're a developer and they're looking to create an apartment complex or whatever it might be. You could even look at prisons. Like people actually design prisons and they design them to suppress people, which is kind of disgusting. So relating back to your question, happiness relates to the built environment and architecture and design when we're not limiting those people. I think more recently, we're starting to understand that. We're starting to get more science behind our buildings and our built environment. We're starting to realize that certain lighting can have an impact on people, your circadian rhythm, air quality, like if you have enough air moving through your space and circulation of that with fresh air, that can affect your brain. And so we're finding that students, you know, in classrooms, if they don't have newer HVAC systems, you know, maybe their brain isn't able to function as highly as someone that would be in a different environment. Another thing that I found interesting in regards to health and well-being was that sometimes the glare from lights on surfaces in a classroom can be distracting to some students who might have a disability. And I know myself, I get distracted by certain things like that. And so just being aware of all those different components, not to make it harder for us to design, but to just make our designs a little bit better and also better for the people that are going to be using it. I think a lot of those foundational scientific findings that we're coming to realize now, they don't have to cost a lot of money either. They can be implemented at different scales of impact and different priorities. And so while we may not be able to use certain materials or the, you know, most expensive HVAC system, we should still be able to take some of those same basic concepts and kind of bring it down to a more affordable level. And in doing that, then hopefully the building occupant will be in a better experience and be uplifted. And then that hopefully will then lead to happiness within the space.
Great. I think that kind of relates as well with what I had planned for my next question for you, because you mentioned that you are an advocate for human-centered built environments. I think that kind of relates very well with what a human-centered built environment is. Can you maybe elaborate a bit more about what that concept of human-centered built environment is?
Sure. So in my experience, in my understanding, that a human-centered design is something that is completely made for the human scale. I think a lot of times we get distracted, kind of pushing larger scope, I guess, for a second. Sometimes we get distracted by like the automobile or other means of things that we've created in society. And I think that kind of dehumanizes us in some ways. And so human-centered design is when we're actually designing for human scale, mm-hmm. and for people, but also putting them at the forefront. We're not a farm animal at the zoo or something like that. And not that I think that they should be treated, you know, badly either, but we're not cattle in a barn. You know, mm-hmm. we have certain needs that if we take the time and the resources and prioritize some of those things, the end result, the building, the built environment, the spaces that we're creating will just be that more special for the people that are using them. And hopefully, kind of going back to your happiness and joy, bring them more joy or enable them to not have to worry about some of the things like, oh, that, you know, it stinks in here, or that light's too bright, or I'm distracted by this, or there's too much sound coming from the room next to me because there's not enough insulation, and really be able to be present and focus on the people that are in the space with you, and then make those memories. And that's another form of happiness, I think.
Okay. And how do you personally advocate for a more human-centered design?
This is difficult. As a young person, I feel that sometimes we learn things, but we don't necessarily have the certifications or the experience on our resume to make it look like we have credibility. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that every profession, every industry struggles with. It's a tough question. I think my advice to anyone who wants to advocate for this is you're not going to get buy-in from everyone, but hopefully you will get buy-in from some. I think vocalize what you have learned and put it on the table. Mm-hmm. If it's not received, don't get fired over it, because then you're not going to help anyone. But lay it on the table, and if they decide that they want more information or they want to go down that route, then take that opportunity. And I think as we as designers start talking about more of these things and start showing the value, and that can also be financial value, because sometimes that will get buy-in a lot quicker than just doing the right thing. That will empower us to be able to bring more of these things into projects. And so that's what I would advise people to do.
Okay. And what are things that, I mean, for example, you mentioned the lighting. Keep in mind that certain people may be affected differently by certain lighting, certain ways that like the light comes in a space. What are the things that as designers or as architects that we can do to take those things into considerations? I mean, for example, if we are designing a school, there are so many different people that will be attending those schools. So what can we do to kind of take into considerations all those different needs, put it in certain ways, different needs that people have in order to make our design better and more human-centered as well?
That is a big, beautiful question. and I don't even know if I have a for sure answer to that. I think I think there's two things that we have to think about. I think we need to really go back to our design process and really involve people in it. Mm-hmm. I think that because we're so focused on money, and architects and architecture firms don't get paid that much usually, mm-hmm. unless you're like really, really big, that design process is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And we're taking the consultation and the meetings with the end user sometimes out of it, or we're shortening that period. And so we're not having as many of those aha moments or understanding some of the aspects that we should be thinking about when we're designing. And so I think that's part of it. And I think looking at the science, as we look at data and good data, not like statistics where I make it look the way I want because this is how I want to design it. Like yeah. Actually using data and not changing it for our liking, I think that should be sufficient. And I think it would be really neat. And I think it's coming. If you look at like generative design and things like that, I think it's coming where that science will be able to be put into our applications that we use to design and build virtually and in the computer. So like Revit and different programs like that, I think we'll start to take some of these things and allow us to access the information a lot quicker. Because up until maybe like 5 years ago, if you wanted to do a light study on the inside of your building, mm-hmm. It would take you quite a while to do that. And now you can design a space and you can do that light study in like probably a matter of minutes. And so now you can have multiple iterations of that same programming with different arrangements and different light patterns and different things happening. Whereas in the past, it would have taken a lot more time. And so I hope I answered your question, but I think that's kind of where we're going, where we can actually analyze things a little bit more and kind of see some of those things ahead of time. And I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where architecture doesn't have any negative impact on a single person. I think mm-hmm. to some degree, there will always be something that will impact someone in a way. But I think if we can move to a place or a way of designing where we limit that as much as possible, I think that's a win.
Okay. I guess that kind of also relates with what I feel that architecture sometimes doesn't really connect with those people that they will be designing for. So it's mostly like, okay, so we design a building and then we give it to the people, but we don't take those thoughts, their thoughts and comments or their opinion or their needs into consideration when designing those buildings. So what are your thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, I really think we need to learn. I think we need to listen to people. I think, not to throw some past people that I've worked with in professionally, but like egos get in the way. Mm-hmm. And even myself, like I have to check my ego. I think we learn stuff and we think that that's the solution now, and then we move forward and we don't think we ever have to look back at that solution that we already think is established. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the right way to go about designing. I think design is a process. You wouldn't write a book the same way every single time, because then no one would buy the second one, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are definitely certain things that you can understand that this is how it is right now. So like, maybe that's what you would find in a kitchen. Like that's pretty standard, but the configuration yeah. of that and the material, like there's many different levels to it. And so some of that is already kind of established, but, what was your question again?
So what are your thoughts on this, the relationship between of what kind of the lack of relationship between the architects, right. Designers, and those who will be using those spaces?
Right. And I think, honestly, what I've seen too, which is kind of disheartening, I live in like a more rural area and there aren't as many architecture firms, and I see a lot of builders taking on the role of a designer, but they don't necessarily have the experience to see things at the same way an architect would. And not to say that it's bad. There's just certain things that maybe aren't taken into consideration, or the end result is not as good as it could be. And I think that also weakens our value as designers, because then people say, oh, well, I can get this design from this builder for a third of your price. Why would I pay you this much? Mm-hmm. And I don't think they understand maybe necessarily what we do. And I think if we could have that conversation to kind of show what our value is and show all these different things that we're thinking about, instead of it's not just four walls to a room. I think that is an important step. As architects and designers, kind of like I was saying previously, I think we need to get rid of the ego in the room. I think that we all need to be continuous learners. Once you graduate, you get that diploma, it's like you're not done learning, because life is consistently changing. Systems are consistently changing. Like, I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation with you like 20 years ago, you know? And so if we don't adapt and learn, I think we won't be as impactful. And I think people will eventually move to someone who is kind of doing those things. And I think we're already seeing that in our industry, like where if you look at what people are looking for, let's say in an apartment building, it's a lot different than what it was maybe 15 years ago in the United States. Like 15, 20 years ago, maybe there weren't certain requirements. Like there was a time when there weren't any health, safety, welfare requirements for apartment buildings in the United States. And you could pretty much design whatever you wanted, or let it run down and you could rent it. And now we have some of those protections to where, well, you can't have holes in the walls. Like you have to have some kind of fire system. You might need a sprinkler system. And so now we're having all those things come into play. I think I kind of went off on a tangent a little bit, but
no problem. So I'm wondering as well, kind of what's your favorite book that you would kind of recommend to the listeners? It doesn't necessarily have to be about architecture either. So it can be about certain other things.
Favorite book. My favorite book. The book that I love history, because we learn from history. And so one of my favorite books that I've ever read, and it's very, very long, and I usually don't read long books because I'm a very distracted person, and I forget things pretty easily. But it's called The Devil's Chessboard, and it's about Alan Dulles, the first CIA director of the United States, and his rise to power, and how he was kind of more powerful and could play the world stage almost more than our president could when he was in his position. And then questioning how was he involved with the assassination of JFK? They don't really say yes or no, but they kind of just leave it as a question. And so that's probably one of my favorite books that I've read. And I will be honest, I haven't read too many books all the way through because I get so distracted, or so I have a lot of books I'm halfway through. But then I also like certain design books. So like I bought this book from, CF Moeller Architects. And it's Welfare Architecture for All. And they actually just published it. And so I've paged through it a little bit, but I haven't fully gotten to read through it. But any architecture book, like if you go to an architecture bookstore, or even sometimes museums have great architecture books. I love reading through it and seeing, you know, what information I don't know yet.
Yeah, of course. And what advice you would also give to our listeners?
Any advice? I would say my advice to listeners would be explore the things that interest you and read into them and learn as much as you can. And you may not use it in your day-to-day function in your job, but if you can continue learning about those things, eventually it might catch up to you. Or you can start incorporating that into your personal brand. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's kind of new for people in general. And I think it's a lot easier now that we have the internet. But like, let's say you are passionate about sustainability and human-centered design, mm-hmm. To stay on topic. If you were able to incorporate that into a podcast, kind of like you're doing, or mm-hmm. Even onto a website, while that may not be impacting the job completely that you're doing at a firm designing, I think it would, but like, let's just say it doesn't too much. Eventually you might become known for some of that stuff that you're looking into and helping people learn about. Mm-hmm. And then people might come to you with questions, or they might come to you asking you to work at their firm. Or you might pivot a little bit out of architecture design to something that's in a related profession that is just as influential or necessary. I think architecture and design helps train your mind to look at things in like a puzzle almost, where you have all these different puzzle pieces and somehow we figure out how to get that picture together. But I've come to find that not everybody's brain is capable of doing that. Not everybody's brain has been trained that way. And the design curriculum kind of teaches us that process. And so even if you're in a similar profession or something that works along the profession of design or architecture, you understand that. And so you can take whatever that passion is or whatever you might be good at, whether that's marketing, it could be pictures, it could be rendering, it could be focusing on a certain element of the built environment. So maybe you're really passionate about air quality or something. Mm-hmm. You then can connect into the architecture mindset and how those problems are solved. And so just learn as much as you can, and don't ever stop learning, because there's always something new around the turn.
That's nice. And do you personally also have a different interest that you kind of apply or can apply in architecture?
Yeah, I do. So I wasn't making enough money at my last job at an architecture firm. And mm-hmm. so I started a side business where I was doing marketing, graphic design and websites. And so nice. that's something I'm still doing through the pandemic. And it kind of has become more of my main thing lately. And so I kind of help with personal branding, which is related, and then website building and website building. I didn't think it was as complex until I had to explain it to someone else. And then it's almost like this wave of like, oh my gosh, that's so much to think about. And then like, how do I find all this content and build all this out? And so over the last 3 years, I've learned how to kind of water it down a little bit to more digestible pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think as architects, that's kind of what we do too, because you have to get some buy-in from the client or buy-in from the developer or whoever it might be to say, well, no, this is actually what we want, and this is actually going to help you later on, or this is the process of establishing this, because then when this is done, then we move to this or what have you. But then also the design aspect of it, making it look a certain way. And so I guess, did that answer your question?
yes, it did.
I could probably talk on and on and on and on and on about different things. That's kind of what I do on the side. And I've always been interested in photography as well. Mm-hmm. I used to actually do professional photography, like at weddings and stuff like that, to help me pay to get through undergraduate school. Mm-hmm. I haven't done too much of it lately just because of the pandemic. I've been kind of staying at home. But I always love getting out my camera and just kind of showing my point of view.
Nice. And before closing off, I want to ask you also one question. Well, in a way, let me phrase it this way. What's one question that you would have wished I asked you during this interview? And what would be your answer to that question as well?
One question that I wished you had asked me. I'm thinking of some funny things, like what kind of ice cream do you like? But like, that's not relevant. One question I wish you would have asked me that you didn't ask me during this interview was, did I learn more in my education or in my 3 years of working at a firm? And my answer to that question would be, I learned different things in different places. As far as design and processes and like how to design, I think I learned most of that in my education. Mm-hmm. As far as like professional practice, how to run a practice and construction documents and the how to build a building, that happened more in the office. And I've heard some people say that they've learned more in the office than they ever did in school. And I guess you could say that is somewhat true, because there's a lot of different pieces to running an office and running a firm. But I think the role of your education, it's not a waste of time. It's not something that's redundant or not necessary. I think it's creating that foundation for everything else to sit on. And so don't think of you and your education as wasting time or wishing to get out of it. Enjoy that time to soak up as much information as you can and to better formulate which direction in architecture or design you want to kind of go into. Because once you get out into the real world and into a firm, it's very easy to be put in a box, and it's sometimes hard to pivot into that other direction that you might be passionate about.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question, because I personally as well feel kind of there's a disconnection between the professional world and the educational world. So a lot of times when you're studying, you don't really get kind of the that point of view of how it is actually working as an architect or a designer. And I think that's kind of missing in the curriculum, kind of relating those worlds together, or kind of being able to see that more in advance, not only in your fourth or fifth year when you're doing when you're doing an internship at a firm, that's kind of get a bit more perspective from working in a firm, but also incorporated that idea from the beginning so people can get an idea, okay, maybe architecture, I may have an idea when I'm starting the career, I have an idea what is architecture about, but getting that point of view of actually working in a firm, you may see things differently and you may kind of maybe recognize that, okay, this is not for me, or yes, I would love to do this, or I would love to do this, but in a different way, kind of also helping you throughout your studies. So I think that's a great question, yeah.
And I guess one more thing on that is, I always wanted to be an architect, I think, but I didn't know that until maybe high school years. Mm-hmm. But then I was scared of it because I knew it was going to be a lot of work, and everybody said it's going to be a lot of late nights and staying up and, yeah, and a lot of work, and the architecture students are always there on campus and they never get to have fun. And I was like, oh, and it's going to be a lot more math. And my marketing, I started in marketing, and that was actually more math than in architecture. And then there were moments, and I'm sure every student has this, like, is this really what I want to do? Or you're trying to get a project done and you're like, is this even worth it? Like, I could just go to bed and be like, not to diss business students, but I could be a business student and probably get more sleep. Is this worth it? And I guess where I'm trying to go with this is I continued to pursue architecture thinking that that's what I wanted to be and that it was this prestigious thing. And to some degree, I think it is. I don't think it gets paid like that, but I think it is somewhat kind of a neat career. Mm-hmm. But I think my ego wanted to keep me attached to that title. And even when I realized that maybe being an architect isn't necessarily the most useful or beneficial use of my abilities and my brain and what I'm good at, mm-hmm. That it's okay. And I think it took me a long time to disconnect the ego saying like, no, you have to be an architect because you went to school for it. It's something you've been talking to people about and you know a lot about it. And kind of pivoting from that, saying that is something that I have. I still want to get licensed, to have that credibility, but that's not the only piece of me. Mm-hmm. There are other pieces of me that are also just as valuable, and that can help people and that can help society. And it doesn't have to be just architect or architecture. And I think once I realized that, and then this happened probably within the last year and a half. So like I graduated in 2016. And so it took me a long while to kind of get rid of that ego attaching itself to the wanting to be an architect. I realized that, and that's what kind of opened the door to sustainable real estate development. And it's related. And I will use a lot of the stuff that I learned in architecture school and even in the profession. And I'll always be able to pivot back to that if I wanted to, but I would caution people about if they feel that same thing. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know if that makes sense or if I was going around mm-hmm. circles or not, but like, I feel like sometimes, or it's maybe it's similar. Like if your family was pressuring you to become a doctor mm-hmm. and like, you have to be a doctor. And then you go through all the education and training and then you realize that you want to go into something that's kind of next to being a doctor and maybe makes the same amount of money or whatever. And you can use what you learned through all that education, but it's not actually, I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yes, it does. I think it's kind of, in a way, being open to different ways of doing things as well. It's not fixating yourself on only architecture, only designing certain buildings, but maybe, as you said, there's more to you than just that. So maybe finding something that also interests you, a different passion that you can also read the architecture as well, and kind of going in that pathway. So
right. Yeah. And I think in doing that too, you get to meet a lot of different people mm-hmm. in related things that kind of relate back to architecture, because architecture is more than just the four walls, like we were saying. It's the air, it's the smells, it's mm-hmm. the colors, it's the materials, it's the spatial arrangement, it's, you know, so many different things and so many different senses and so many psychology even. Yeah. And so all of the things are kind of connected, and it's kind of overwhelming that our job is to take all of that and put it into a space. Yeah. But yeah, so it's a lot of pressure, but don't feel pressure to stay in that lane if you think that you might be happier, more useful in a different lane.
Yeah. Yeah. Always staying open and flexible to change. Yeah.
Right.
And if people want to get in touch with you or follow the work you do, where can they find you?
Yeah. So my Instagram is probably the easiest place. It's ZACHKUNS.TK. That's also my website. Mm-hmm. That's under construction right now. And then I have my own business, which is ZFMK Creative. You can find me on there if you want to ask me some opinions or for help on personal branding. I'll be launching some stuff hopefully by this summer to kind of help people go through a step-by-step process of how to get like all your LinkedIn and social media kind of speaking the same language. And then if you want to add a website, like how do you do that and how does that look the same as your portfolio or have the same graphic language, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's where you can do that. Or you can just email me. It's zach@zfmk.cf. And I check that pretty regularly.
Great. I will leave those links in the show description as well, so people can access them. Yeah. Great. Yeah. So Zach, thank you very much for coming on the show, for taking the time to be here. It's been a wonderful having this opportunity to interview you as well. So thank you very much for that.
Yeah, thank you for letting me come on the show and having this experience, this opportunity to share some things that I've learned. And mm-hmm. I'm no expert, but I've taken up a lot of information over my years. And so I don't mind trying to share some of it. And I look forward to seeing future shows and what this does for you. So
great. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just like that, we have reached the end of another episode of Designing for Happiness. I would like to thank our guest Zachary Kunzman again for being on the show. And as I said just a couple of seconds ago, I will add the links to his website, Instagram, and email in the show description. So if you want to get in contact, if you want to get in touch with Zachary, or if you want to follow his work, you go to the search description and you'll find all the links there. Also, if you have thoughts and comments or questions about the show, feel free to do so by sending a voice message on anchor.fm/happydesign, or you can also contact and follow the show on Instagram at @dfhpodcast. And if you love the show, please consider sharing it with your friends and family, and also leaving a review on Apple Podcast. Also, you can hit the follow button on Spotify so we'll be notified every time a new episode goes live. Designing for Happiness is available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor.fm, or wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next Wednesday with a brand new episode.